far from emerging from the earlier sessions depressed, I've been energized. I picked the right sessions, obviously. Both of them actually were on the labor movement. One of them was on transnational labor organizations, which Sakit Soni spoke, and the other was on the awesome power of transformation of union democracy. Both very stimulating panels. They remind me of how much I like to come to Left Forum. Now I'm going to have a moment of kind of depressing stuff, and then we're going to get back into the upbeat. Shortly after I started teaching law in 1987, I was sitting in my office one late afternoon, and I read something saying that economists predicted that union density in the private sector would go down to 9% by the turn of the millennium, which was a staggering thought to me at the time, having been involved in insurgent movement within a metal trades union just recently. And so now, today, or yesterday, I just happened to notice that apparently economists are predicting that union density in the private sector is going to go down to 2.5%. And because the prediction turned out to be right in 1987 or 86, I'm taking this seriously. And to me, what it means is that we don't have a lot to lose. We need to consider drastically different approaches. And so I certainly second everything that Bill said about that. Now, one of the remarkable things about the position of the labor movement today is that the labor movement has absolutely no solution, not even a proposal for dealing with this problem. A year ago, the movement did have a proposal, and it was called the Employee Free Choice Act. I want to say that the Employee Free Choice Act, we should be celebrating its demise. It was wrongly conceived in just about every way. And I actually supported it as part of the, just to be loyal, and because so many good people were putting out so much effort in its behalf. So I don't want to belittle that energy or that effort. And but now that it's barely even mentioned, I mean, it's just disappeared in a fizz, and now it's on to jobs. I think it's time to say, let's not do the same thing over again, at least. And what I want to contrast it with is actually not really something all that new. It's only new to us. But rather, to consider the possibility of reviving an idea that was used by the labor movement in the first half of the 20th century, when the labor movement was actually winning some workers' rights statutes and protections for rights, but much more importantly than any legal protections that were being won, the labor movement was actually exercising some rights, and the rights claims that were advanced at that time were integral to the exercise of those rights. And it was the exercise of the rights that was key, not their enshrinement in statutes. In fact, it's even possible that once we got past the Norris LaGuardia Act to the National Labor Relations Act, it might have hurt to have the rights enshrined in a statute. So in contrasting the practice of the American labor movement in the early 20th century with the campaign for EFCA, I want to just mention four different criteria on which they differ. First of all, the time frame in the early 20th century was long-term, and I mean relentlessly long-term. Labor leaders and activists just kept pounding away, we need the rights to organize and engage in concerted activity. And they came back in Congress after Congress, and everybody knew what people were going to say when they stood up to speak, as irritating as it might have been, and that developed a little force. Second, the model was based on worker practices, not staff practices. The Employee Free Choice Act was developed by staff members getting together and trying to figure out what's going to make our job easier, not based on worker practices. And the labor laws, certainly the Norris LaGuardia Act, was based on worker practices. It was, what are workers doing? Well, they're self-organizing, and that term went into the statute, and they are engaging in concerted activity for mutual aid or protection, mutual being the key word, mutualism, solidarity. I'm not going to do too much on the negative here because of the time, but I do want to mention that union staffers can collect cards, and union staffers can go into arbitration and argue for things. Workers can self-organize, and workers can strike. The Employee Free Choice Act mainly focused on card check and compulsory arbitration to get a first contract, things that are staff-driven. And the what I think were the only really good provisions of the law, which were the enforcement provisions for worker rights, were emphasized much less. Third, the strategy for passing the law, the turf on which the campaign was made was the turf on which we lose. Money and lobbying. And I'm not just, money I don't need to talk about here, even though there are astounding facts about money that could be said that would probably surprise a lot of people. They did me when I read them. But the other one I want to talk about as a teacher of constitutional law is the fact that we don't have a democracy, that a cowboy or a cowgirl in Wyoming has 15 times as many votes effectively as a worker in New York City. And it's very hard to get legislation passed on that. And the reason, of course, is that Wyoming has two senators and New York has two senators. And so when you get down to a situation even without the filibuster, and of course the filibuster isn't even the filibuster anymore. It's now they just sign off on a little piece of paper. So to get through that, we're not going to do it with money and lobbying. The only thing we have, the only part of the terrain where we can win is labor, withholding of labor power. And that's not to belittle labor community coalitions. I totally agree that they're crucial and can help in every way, but it's really with the withholding of cooperation, as Francis Piven said way back when, that is the source of power of poor people. And then finally, principle. The Employee Free Choice Act the principle of the act is free choice. And what is free choice? Free choice is a market concept. What you visualize is workers making a free choice. How am I going to get more? Am I going to get more by picking a union and paying dues and having a bargained agreement? Or am I going to get more by remaining on my own, letting others pick the union, and then I can free ride on them? Certainly that would be the dynamic in the early stages of a union campaign where people have to step out and take risks. Organizing takes place, I believe, through solidarity and people pulling together. It's not about free choice. It's not about rational choice. It's about what kind of person you are and whether you view your solution to your problems as pulling together. So I would say that instead of free choice, we should be arguing for, of course, solidarity at the bottom, but freedom of association. That's the principle that we should be supporting, that the movement of the early 20th century supported, and that principle can be quite powerful. And we should be outrageous about that in precisely the way that Francis was mentioning there. That is, the 13th Amendment prohibits slavery and involuntary servitude. Workers often feel, I certainly felt, that without organization, I was in a condition of involuntary servitude. That was the position that the American labor movement took in the first half of the 20th century. It drove people nuts. How can you be in involuntary servitude if you have the right to vote and you have the right to quit? People said that denigrates the experience of slaves. Not so. It was black workers above all others who drew the lesson from that and understood the connection between not having the right to organize and engage in concerted activity and the need for those rights in order to bring about freedom. And that's the end of my time. So,
thank you very much, Jim. Very good.